if you take credit for your own power, if you take credit for everything that you have and say, look at the wonderful lands that I've amassed for myself, look at this house that I've built for myself, look at these crops that I've grown for myself, then God says, then you will have forgotten me and our covenant, this marriage arrangement that we have. And yes, God used marriage as the picture for his relationship with Israel. Israel was unfaithful over and over again. The Old Testament bears that out. And yet God continued to call them, his bride, back to himself. And we're going to see a picture of this as we look at the character of Rahab in Joshua chapter 2. Here's a woman who doesn't know the God of Israel. She's not a member of the covenant community that Israel was. She's actually under the condemnation as a Canaanite with all the other Canaanites because of the sins that the Canaanites had committed. God was going to destroy the Canaanites in the land of Canaan, and because of his promise to Abraham, he's going to give that land to Israel. And yet something changes with Rahab. Her story changes. Her hope changes. And our message is called a transforming hope. And so let's look at this transformation that is happening not just in Israel, but also in Rahab. And we remember that it can happen inside of us. So let's read together. Joshua chapter 2, starting at verse 1. Then Joshua the son of Nun sent two men as spies secretly from Shittim, saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. So they went, and they came into the house of a harlot whose name was Rahab and lodged there. It was told the king of Jericho, saying, behold, men from the sons of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land. And the king of Jericho sent word to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them, and she said, yes, the men came to me, but I do not know where they were from. It came about, it was time to shut the gates at dark, that the men went out. I do not know where the men went, so pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them. But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them in the stalks of flax which she had Jericho is right at the center of Israel. It guards the crossroads that come from the east, that come from Shittim, and it guards roads that go north and south. If you want to come into Israel from the east, you've got to pass through Jericho. You're going to have to submit yourself to whoever rules Jericho because they control the land through which you're going to travel. So Israel must take out Jericho first. And Jericho is a very fortified city. Why? Because it is in a very strategic location, which means it's probably been attacked before by others who want to control territory. So it has become a very mighty fortress. And you can visit its ruins today. We will look at that when we get to the Battle of Jericho later in Joshua. But Israel is operating under this hope. Joshua has this hope. And we remember in Joshua chapter 1 how many times that phrase was repeated to Joshua and to the people and then back to Joshua again. Be strong and courageous. Be very courageous. Why be strong and courageous? And the reminder from God is because I am with you and I will not abandon you. So our first point is I have hope because God keeps his promises. We lose hope because we lose sight of this. We lose hope because we forget that God is at work, and we rather than define how we should be feeling and thinking by what God says, we define what we think and how we feel by our circumstances and by what we see with our eyes or by what other people tell us is the truth around us. But God wants us to see something different. So think about Joshua. He's at the border of the Jordan River. He's looking at this and he's thinking, I've been here before. 40 years ago I was here, the nation of Israel was here, and Moses had this big public affair, and he recruited 12 spies, one from each tribe, and it was open to the people. The people saw them leave. They traveled for 40 days, these 12 spies, and traveled the length and breadth of Canaan, and brought back a report saying the land is filled with milk and honey. It's filled with produce. It's ripe for the taking, except it's a mighty land. It's got cities with tall walls. There's giants in the land, big armies. And 10 of those spies said, we could never do this. 2 of those spies, one being Joshua, said, hold on. The Lord will fight our battle for us. Don't doubt the Lord. They warned the 10 spies. They warned the nation of Israel, but Israel did not heed that warning. They lost hope. They had a failure of faith, and they froze. They said, we shouldn't have come here. But did God bring us out here to die? They didn't believe the words that they had heard. So God said, our relationship here is based on faith. Okay, I will use the next generation, and everybody over the age of 20 will wander around the wilderness until you die, and I'll use your kids. And then we'll cross the Jordan River. So here's Joshua, hoping that we're not about to have a replay of 40 years ago. Joshua's in his 80s, most likely, and he's saying, I don't think I have another 40 years in me. I don't want to go through that again. So he compares. Moses made a public display of this, sent the spies out publicly, had them come back and give a public report. So verse 1 tells us he does this in secret. I think it's in secret from Israel. The nation of Israel doesn't know about this. He wants them to go out in secret. The people in Jericho won't know about this either. He wants them to bring back a report. It's not going to be a public report. It's going to be for Joshua's eyes only, and he's going to make an assessment of it as a military commander. He also is looking at the statistics. 2 out of 12 give a favorable report. So how many spies should I send this time? 2. That's a good number. Worked last time. So he picks 2 men, and he probably picks 2 men that he trusts. These could probably be his lieutenants, as he was a lieutenant to Moses. And so he picks these guys who trust in the Lord, and they go in. You know, Joshua is probably applying a lot of wisdom here in the fact that he's changing the plan. It's different than what Moses did it. He's trying to learn the lessons from last time. But, you know, we can plan all we want and learn from our past mistakes all we want. But failure is always going to creep in from the edges, usually from circumstances that we cannot control. And look what happens in verse 1. He wants to be secret, right? He sends them out secretly. And the spies, verse 1 says, they go into Jericho. They meet up somehow with this harlot. They lodge in her house. It's actually a good place to lodge because if you want to stay covert, you're going into a city where you're going to stand out as a foreigner. You're going to go to the question you. They're going to say, oh, that guy's going to a prostitute. Well, of course, that's where strangers go. Nobody wants to be seen, so everybody will turn a blind eye, right? Wrong. The very night they get there, as we read, the king of Jericho receives a report saying, men from Israel have come. This very night, verse 2 says. So Joshua prepared all the secrecy, but it failed. His plan failed. Their mission now is in jeopardy. These guys are supposed to seek out and spy on the city of Jericho, maybe measure its walls, count its troops. They didn't know about the crazy plan of circling the city for 7 days and the walls falling down. They're thinking, we're going to take this militarily. We're going to lay siege to it, right? That's probably what they're thinking. They don't even get a chance to get too far into the city. They don't get past the walls. Rahab lives on a wall. And so the very same night they get there, they're trapped. You know, I wonder if Joshua knew this. If he knew this was going to happen, would he have sent them anyway, or would he have froze? You know, past failures didn't keep him from freezing. He's trusting the Lord. Don't let fear of failure paralyze your walk of faith. We get so tied up in wanting to make sure everything's done just perfectly, just right, that we will fail to take that step because we think we need to be ready. We think we need to have all the bases covered. We think everybody needs to be with us. But we keep forgetting that we're not perfect, nor will we ever be. But our perfection, our righteousness, comes from God, who provides it to us. Jesus is called not just the author of our faith, so your faith in him isn't your idea. He's called the perfecter of our faith. How much faith does it take to be saved? Not much. You have to know all the truths and understand all God's word, and we have to all agree on the same things? No. You need to decide who God is. Are you going to believe what he says about himself, or are you going to listen to somebody else or yourself? So don't let fear paralyze you. Don't let it keep you from walking and trusting in the Lord who loves you. Well, what we're doing this morning is first we're going to look at the spies and then we're going to look at Rahab. So let's continue to learn some lessons from the spies. So the spies are in Rahab's house. That knock comes on the door and they discover that this prostitute with whom they have lodged is going to protect them. Imagine their surprise at finding Rahab. Of all the people in Jericho, they find the one person who's trusting in the God of Israel. So they're up on the roof. Rahab gets the pursuers to go off on a wild goose chase, and then she comes and informs them why she's doing this. And so look at verse 9. Verse 9 through 11 gives us her reasoning. She says, I know that the Lord has given you this land. And she tells them of how they're in dread. They're terrified because of Israel, and they've melted away. In verse 10, she says, we have heard. In verse 11, again, she says, we have heard. They've heard of what God has done, conquering Egypt, what Israel has done through the Lord, conquering the Amorites. And so she says, again, that they have no more courage. And she says, again, in verse 11, our hearts have melted away. And the picture of melting here, there's two different Hebrew words. One describes the melting like of an ice cube, and the other one describes the melting of wax on a candle. In both senses, they've gone from having structure, from having solidity, to just being a puddle. And can you imagine these two spies who are now facing not just the failure of their mission, but the end of their own lives? How these words from Rahab, not just the surprise at having this woman protect them, but these words. Where did she get these words? Who told her this? Because they already knew this, that this is what it was supposed to be. And maybe doubt was beginning to creep up in their hearts. And this is what Satan wants to do. trust in me because I'm the guy. He says, I'm going to show you. It's not just a person, some figure, some statue that you're trusting in, but someone who loves you, who cares for you, who wants you to learn and even take baby steps in your path to trust in him. He wants you to understand that he is good and he has a plan for you. He has your good in mind. And sometimes what he has in mind as our good isn't always what we have in mind as our good. But he wants us to learn that he is so good beyond our own reasoning and imagining that even when you don't know what to do in the situation you're in, you can call on him, rest in him, rely on him. So they're encouraged by this word, and the proof of the solidity of their faith, I can imagine their faith went kind of began to go to liquid for a moment, but it reconstitutes, doesn't melt away. And look at verse 14. Here's the proof. So the men said to her, our life for yours, if you do not tell this business of ours, and it shall come to pass when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. He doesn't say if the Lord gives us the land. He says when. Now he knows for certain. Joshua sent the spies in to check out the land, but probably also to check out the morale and the state of the people. That's the most important thing. If you're going to war and your enemy has no will to fight, then you know that victory is certain. So they see this. God has revealed this to them. He already had his promise. Now they have this little Polaroid shot proving that God is true. Polaroid is not a good phrase to use, is it? Polaroids are kind of out of, that's like 1985. We have a picture, a picture that God is giving them of the future. The people aren't going to be able to withstand the nation of Israel because God has already began to erode away their confidence. Our next point is that God brings about his plan for your life in his way and in his timing. Long sentence, but God brings about his plan for your life in his way and in his timing. Look at verses 22-24. So we're looking at the spies. The spies escape because of Rahab. They cross the back across the Jordan River. They didn't use a car. It does say the fords of the Jordan, but it is not a ford. It's not a Chevy. A ford is a river, a shallow river crossing. Again, they probably had to swim because it's flood season. But they departed and came to the hill country and remained there for 3 days until the pursuers returned. Verse 21 says, they returned to Joshua, and they relate everything that had happened to them. And Joshua says, hey, so tell me about the city of Jericho. Well, we didn't really get too far. We visited a prostitute. Now imagine Joshua, just imagine his face. You, what? And they say, no, this was the logical place to stay. It was getting nighttime. We needed to hide. But they found out that we were there, and we couldn't see the city. But God let us see his representative in that city, and her name is Rahab, and here's what she said. And so they said to Joshua, surely the Lord has given us all the land. Moreover, the inhabitants of the land cannot stand against us. They're pools of pitiful fear. They know what the God of Israel is capable of doing, and they cannot stand against us. Christian that they see faith in action, faith being lived out. People saying, yes, what you've heard is true, and it validates what they've heard. It's amazing, though, how long have the Canaanites been hearing this? For 40 years. They've been hearing about this God and this mighty nation of Israel just across the river. And it's amazing how the enemies believed it a lot easier than the Israelites believed it. But when they finally come into contact with the messengers, her faith comes into action, and she lies. It's important to note that the Bible doesn't commend her for lying. Is there such thing as a white lie? I'll appeal to you, and I'll say no. Now, you may be in certain circumstances where to lie to protect an innocent, I mean, you weigh the two. What's more important? You know, you got to choose the lesser of two evils. But she, you know, hopefully, and then prayerfully, you're not in any of those circumstances, but Scripture does not commend her for lying. Rather, in Hebrews, she's commended for her faith, and in James 2, she's commended for receiving these messengers. James calls these spies messengers. And so she does that. She receives them. She is indeed a prostitute. Some in Christian history have tried to gloss it over. Even Josephus says, well, you know, the word prostitute in the Hebrew could mean innkeeper. But James clears that up for us pretty clearly in the Greek and uses a word that only has one translation. She is a prostitute. She also is not married when she says, will you save my family? She doesn't talk about a husband or kids. It's siblings and parents. So she hears this, and she believed. And by believing, Rahab believed and rejected the culture around her. And when she does this, she's taking an incredible risk. She's taking upon herself the risk of the loss of her own life, and maybe the loss of her family's life. By siding with these two spies, she is committing treason against her own king and against her own people. She's betraying them. She knows they're going to die. That's why she appeals for her life. Rahab, when she believed, she makes this statement of belief, which is on the front of your bulletin. It's verse 11, the second half of it. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. She's making an incredible statement of faith. In this one, she's not just saying what she believes in. By reading this, we understand what she no longer believes in. The chief god of the Canaanites is Baal. Baal is one of many gods that the Canaanites had, and he was known as residing in the clouds. He would bring down thunder. He's responsible for bringing down rain so the crops would grow. He's the fertility god. He has a wife, and her name is Asherah. And the Asherim, the Asherah poles all around Israel in these days and in the days after, represented his wife. And so the people would offer sacrifices, and prostitution was involved in this worship to try to get the gods to show them favor. We want to have a good harvest, so we have to live according to these superstitions, and we have to be afraid that we don't displease the gods. So she's living in fear, she's living in bondage, and now she sees an opportunity for freedom. So when she says that the Lord, a God, Yahweh, your God, he is God in heaven, she's saying Baal is not the God in heaven, so she's chucking him out. He's not real, and he's the God beneath. Asherah and all those other gods, the gods associated with the streams or the farm fields or the ocean, they're not gods. Your God is the God of everything. He's the God of the universe. He has the power to destroy. She totally believes that. She goes through this process. First, it's the intellect. She hears the stories. And then it's fear. She says, we're all afraid. She sees that they're powerful. And then she moves from intellect to emotion, and then from emotion to will and action. And the action that she takes is saving these spies, saving these messengers, and then appealing for her own life. So she deals with them, makes this bargain, this covenant, and they say that they will do this. And there's a condition, but you have to gather your family in your home. Do not come out, and hang this scarlet thread or this scarlet rope outside the window. So Rahab displayed the scarlet cord, and it becomes the mark of the promise, of the covenant. There are many covenants in the Bible, and many of them have marks. The covenant, the promise made to Noah that God would never flood the earth again, was what? A rainbow, a beautiful picture that God has provided that stands for his judgment and for his promise to not judge the world again in that way, but he will judge it again in another way. There's the promise made to Abraham that his descendants would, through his descendants, and particularly one of them, the whole world would be blessed, and that his descendants would possess the land through which Abraham walked, the land of Canaan, the land of Israel today. The sign of that covenant is what? Circumcision. God brought Israel out of Egypt and brought them into a new, really a marriage relationship with him, and the sign of that covenant really is Passover, the blood on the doorposts. The sign of our covenant with Jesus Christ that we're going to celebrate here in a moment is communion. Jesus held up the cup and the bread and said, this is the token of the new covenant, paid for with his blood. It was really a marriage ceremony. Drink the cup. And by drinking the cup, you say, I do. And so here is her mark. In a sense, it's her own Passover. She's in bondage. Condemnation is going to come down upon the city. And you stay in your house like the Israelites had to at Passover. Don't come out. Stay in your house. Be dressed, ready to go. Because when we come, we're going to take you out. And if you go out, your blood is not on our heads. But if you stay in there and somebody kills you, your blood is on our heads, they say. So they take the price of the covenant upon their own lives, just as Jesus took the price of this covenant, our relationship with him, the payment for our sins. He died for us. So these spies pledge their own lives. They say, it's on our own heads. Verse 19. And so she stays there, and instead of blood on a doorpost, it's this red thread, a red rope, perhaps the same rope that she let them climb down the wall with, perhaps. So Rahab waited for salvation in enemy territory. This chapter ends. We're back in Jordan. We're safe. We're with Joshua and the spies, but Rahab is still in Jericho. She has to take the risk to go tell her family, hey, you guys need to come and stay at my house. Want to have a slumber party? Sure. How long we staying? I don't know. She has to tell them everything, hoping they won't go and betray her. She's living in enemy territory. People are wondering,